Episode 999, My Strength is My Story with Katie Davis Majors, Daring to Hope.
Moms, needing a little inspiration and a ray of hope? You've come to the right place. This is the show that you can turn to for just the pick-me-up you need. This is Create Your Now, Your Best Selfie. Here's your host, certified life coach, personal trainer, and nutritionist, Christiane Wargo. Staring at a stop
sign, watching people. Happy, happy day. It is my favorite day of the week. Yes, it is My Strength is My Story. And today we have an incredible woman with us here. Get ready. We're going to travel the world across the globe to Uganda. Oh, yes, you heard right. We have Katie Davis Majors in the house. Your heart is going to be warmed. You are going to be inspired beyond anything you could imagine. Think about this. 13. That's all I'm going to say because you're going to have to stay tuned. For those of you who are brand new to our family, welcome friends and family of Katie. I am so delighted to have you. If you already haven't had the opportunity, you'll want to head on over to createyournow.com where you can learn more and sign up for the Kisses newsletter, the Keep It Simple Strategy, Everyday Solutions to Live, Love, and Impact. Well, Katie does all of that. She has lived, she has loved, and she's continuing to impact. And oh my goodness, I cannot tell you enough. In fact, you just right now off the bat, you've got to get her brand new book, Daring to Hope, Finding God's Goodness in the Broken and the Beautiful. This is so important in today's world. We get caught up in just our everyday responsibilities, our everyday duties. And you want some refreshment? You want some rejuvenation? I promise you, Katie is going to bring it today. So carve out some time and really listen to her words. And I promise you, your heart and your mind and your spirit will be touched. Without further ado, let's bring in and welcome Katie Davis Majors, Daring to Hope. Welcome to Create Your Now. I am so excited, thrilled beyond belief. We have Katie Davis Majors here with us today. She is a woman on a mission with a heart full of gold for Uganda. She is a wife to Benji of almost 3 years, a mother, now listen here, to 13 daughters and one son. That makes happily ever after for 16 people. But her reach doesn't stop there. Katie is an author of her New York Times bestseller, Kisses from Kate, with her newest book, Daring to Hope. And I got it right here. Oh, yes, you're going to want to pick up a copy, Finding God's Goodness in the Broken and the Beautiful. Katie Davis Majors moved to Uganda over a decade ago and founded Amanzima Ministries, an organization that cares for vulnerable children and families in Uganda. There is so much to talk about, Katie, my friend and sister in Christ. Welcome. Come on in.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Oh, it is my pleasure and honor. I have read your book. I have marked your book. I've highlighted your book. I have been touched by your book. So to really talk about your life and the gifts and the talents that you bring to a country far away, take us back to what drew you to Uganda.
My mom and I, during my senior year of high school, my mom and I came on a mission trip here for 3 weeks over my Christmas break. We were serving at an orphanage, and I fell in love with the people. I fell in love with the culture. And when I got back to high school, I just couldn't stop thinking about how to get back, and I really prayed that God would open a door and make it apparent if I was supposed to come. And I got an email from a pastor I had met while I was here asking me to come and teach kindergarten at a school he was opening for his orphanage. So I moved over here and lived with his family, worked at their orphanage and taught kindergarten there. During that year, it was really apparent to me that the family here is very much lacking. A lot of people are forced to put their children in institutions or send them out to work at a very young age, not because of a lack of love for them, but just because of a lack of finances. And so because of poverty, a lot of families are unnecessarily torn apart. And that just really burdened me. So that's how Amazima was born. I started sending two little girls to school so that they could continue to live with their grandmother instead of winding up on the streets or in an orphanage. And as I told that story to my parents and even different friends back home, they said, oh, wow, like we would love to contribute to something like that. So before I knew it, I was sending 10 children to school who otherwise wouldn't have been in school. And 10 kind of grew to 20, which grew to 25. And before you know it, we had 50 children. And I decided, oh, maybe I'll give this thing a name and we'll call it a ministry and see how far we can take it. So that was all within the first year of living here. Today, Amazima Ministries sponsors 600 children. So we pay for these children to go to school because school fees are very expensive here, probably one of a family's biggest financial burdens. And many families here are big. So we pay for children to go to school. We give some nutritional assistance when necessary. We pay for some of their medical care. And our desire is really to empower their parents. So we do some vocational training with parents and guardians, hoping that they can one day sustain their own family. One of the biggest and most important parts of our program is our mentors, and they are a great group of social work staff who get time with these families one-on-one weekly and also meet the kids during school and during their lunch breaks for Bible studies. And they're really where the life change happens. You know, you pay for these kids to go to school and give some financial support, but their real life change is happening in relationship when they have a mentor, an auntie or an uncle who says, you can do it and Jesus loves you, and really pours into them and also shares the word with them. So it's been really amazing to watch the way God has grown our ministry. And then this year, we opened a high school, which has been a dream for several years. We were having to send our children to boarding schools that were quite far out of this area for them to really get a high-caliber education. And we felt like we were losing that relational piece of the ministry at such a critical age. We really didn't want to be paying for kids to go to school, but not having the relational influence and not being able to still disciple them and share the word with them. So we started this year with our first class of 72 students, and they are all learning to think critically and learning to be creative and just so much more than that, really being discipled and poured into every single day by an amazing group of teachers and staff. And so that has been just the fulfillment of a long-term dream, and we're really excited about that.
Wow. Oh, my goodness. I'm amazed. Well, as a homeschool mom, I know you homeschooled your daughters, and I don't know if you still do, but tell us a little bit, because I know we've got moms who listen in, dads who listen in, and what is it like there with the education system? How does it differ from America when we're looking at, you know, elementary into high school?
Sure. There are a lot of similarities. The grading scale is a bit different. It's British, so it's really primary school, which is P1 through P7, and then secondary school, which is S1 through S6. So 13 years of total school, really, really heavily focused on testing. So you don't pass the grade if you don't pass your end of year test, especially your P7 test, your S4 test, your S6 test. So you get a lot of teaching that's really focused on rote memorization. Children here can memorize and spout off facts like crazy. It's very impressive, but also there's not a lot of why, and there's not a lot of creativity. And so that's something we really desire to change at the Amazima School. We really want to teach children to be leaders, and with that comes a good deal of creativity and a good deal of courage. And it's been super exciting to see the students, even this year, in the first year, already start to adapt to that. I still homeschool my two youngest, and then we have little Noah toddling around, like pulling all the books off the shelves. But I have homeschooled all of them until 6th or 7th grade. They all start to go to school around 6th or 7th grade. We've been thankful. We've found some good schools that we really like that mix up a little bit more of a Ugandan curriculum and an international curriculum. So it's been a good fit for us. But I do think so fondly of the years when I had them all at home. I think, like, God is so gracious. I don't even remember how I did that. And even today, just teaching two of them felt kind of hard. And I was like, oh, this is so hard. I can't do it. And then I said to myself, like, you used to do this with 10 of them at a time. You can do it. You can totally do it.
And what are you thinking? And this is nothing.
Yeah, two should be okay. You got it.
Well, you do got this. And Oh, I mean, I read your book, Katie, and you had me in tears. You had me yelling at times in the mountaintops. And I read in there you're a runner. So I couldn't run and read your book, but I did walk and read majority of your book. And so it really got me, clued into how you just have this heart for these people. And I think sometimes here in America, there is some segregation as into what happens really in the other world. And for you to bring this to light and to really say, you know what, this is what happens, and to be a missionary out there in Jesus' feet, what a blessing you are.
Oh, well, thank you. I mean, I think I'm the one who's blessed. The Lord has really used this place and this calling to teach me so much more about himself. I can't really imagine where I would be without it.
Well, in your book, you talked about the baker's dozen, and that kind of made me smile. I was like, I get that. Some people who don't understand that, they don't realize that's 13. You also, your heart was crushed because there was an expected 14. And talk a little bit to that.
Sure. That was actually right around the time that I was finishing up the first book that I wrote. We had a little girl living with us named Jane, and I did intend to adopt her just like all the rest of the girls. We had had foster children intentionally before that we knew were foster children and that we intended to resettle with family. And we've had different children live with us in that capacity over the years, but for Jane, we had searched for her family and we had not found them, and we really believed that there wasn't anybody out there for her, and we had begun to move forward with the adoption. So when her biological mother came back wanting her, it was quite a shock. Honestly, it was not expected, and truly it wasn't what I wanted. And so I think I struggled. You know, here I am running this ministry that's trying so hard to enable and empower parents to take care of their children, and then a parent shows up and wants her child, but I feel like, no, this is my child. This has been my child for so many years now. She was four and a half, and I had had her since she was about one and a half, and so she had grown up with me. I was the mom that she knew, and she was very much a part of our family, and I think that was the first time that I really felt like God didn't hear me. I really felt like I was crying out for something that I believed was good. I was crying out for something that I believed was right. And I felt like God was not answering. And I wondered, you know, God, if you are who you say you are, if you are good and kind and merciful, then why is this going this way? And I kept kind of trying to write the ending my way and kind of explain it away. I would say, oh, well, God would only allow this to happen because he knows that this will be better for Jane. Or, oh, well, God will only allow this to happen because maybe Nancy's going to become a believer and really turn her life around. And, I kept trying to write the ending in my own head. And I think what God showed me is that we don't always get to see that. You know, I believe that God is a redemptive God and a good God and a merciful God. And am I able to believe that when my outward circumstance doesn't show that and it doesn't appear that way? So I prayed for months and months and months that Jane would come back to live with us and that we would be able to have her again. And as you read in the book, she does come back to live with us, but she comes back with her birth mom, and God, you know, kind of changes my heart and allows me to see that it was my mission to support that family being together and not them being a part of our family. And it was very, very difficult, but it was also a time that he used to teach me a lot and a time when I very much felt his presence with me.
Mm-hmm. You talk a lot about going, you have your house, and I tried to picture it as I was reading your book, and you talk about your guest house, sure. You know, and you found yourself sometimes, you said you couldn't escape places, but the one place you could go after everyone was in bed was to the bathroom, and you would just sit there and you would just let the tears fall. What was that like for you?
Yeah, it's funny. It's probably hard to picture, but we have our house that we live in, and then in the back is kind of a row just of three rooms and a bathroom and a little kitchen. And so different people and families stay out there sometimes, but depending on the severity of the situation, we also had a guest room that they would stay in. And I think the first time I started using the bathroom was because there was a family staying with us that had come into the guest room, and then there was another woman staying with us. So she was sleeping on the couch because we were like out of rooms. And so all the girls would go to bed and I would turn off all the lights and come to sit on the couch and, oh no, the couch is occupied, and go to be over. Oh no, there's somebody in that room. You know, you're going to wake somebody up anywhere you went. And so the bathroom kind of became my prayer closet, you know, and it became a place where I could sit and cry out to God, and nobody could see me and nobody could hear me. And I wasn't bothering anybody, but I could also be upset and not worry that my kids would see that, or my even our visitors would see that and feel that they were causing me some kind of pain or something. But it became a sweet place where then even years later, when we would have nobody staying with us, just out of habit, I would kind of find myself in the bathroom because that had become my prayer spot, and that had been the spot that I felt God speaking to me.
Yeah, you found his voice and you began to hear him, because later in the book and the stories that you tell, which we'll get to some of those, we're not going to tell all of the stories because everybody's going to want to pick up their own copy of Daring to Hope, Finding God's Goodness in the Broken and the Beautiful. You will want to pick up your own copy. It is truly an incredible book. I feel privileged not even just to speak with you, but to have read it. And I think sometimes there's a lot of good stories out there, but we hear more of the bad stuff that happens, you know, all the time. But it was in this bathroom that, you know, you found his voice. And then later you said you were able to seek him out now, even in the noise. But oddly enough, let me quote you here. In your book, you said, and this was at the beginning, we can be a bit of a mess, but we have a God who makes up for all we lack. A God who promises beauty for ashes and streams in the desert and grace for today. How did you find that? You open your front door and it's not like you've got, you know, just running water and easy electricity. I mean, it's totally different when if you were here in Tennessee, well, you know, it would have been a lot easier.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I really do think that God just gives you what you need. You know, there are times that I look back at different seasons of our life where our house has been so full, or when the kids were younger, or in different seasons or whatever, you know, you look back at times and think, we did what? How did we do that? And you just know, like, it could only have been God's grace that sustained us. And I mean, I really do believe that when we're obedient to follow what he's asking of us, whether that is something very simple or something very unusual, he gives us what we need to do it.
In the midst of your wrestling, because you wrestle a lot in this book, and in the stories that you tell, and you wrestled with the loss of Catherine. You wrestled with the loss of Betty, if I remember correctly.
That's right.
Talk a little bit to, you know, whichever one, you don't have to tell both stories. I know they were both very, very special to you. And this compassion that I think we don't understand the compassion of Jesus until we see sometimes the compassion of somebody else's love to somebody else.
Yeah, I'll talk about Catherine because I feel like my faith grew so much because of her. She was a woman who came to live with us with her children, and she was very, very ill. And I just believed that God was going to heal her from her illness. And I prayed to that end, and my children prayed to that end. And I just really never considered that there would be any other alternative, because I believed that God was going to heal her. And then he didn't. And that might be the very hardest thing that I've ever wrestled with is just how could you not answer that prayer? Like, wasn't that praying for the right thing? Wasn't that the good and merciful and kind thing would be for this woman to live, to raise up her very young children? You know, it just It didn't seem logical that he would have answered our prayers in any other way than to heal her. And I think that's when bathrooms started to become my safe place, because we had people move in kind of immediately after that. And I was not through processing or praying through everything that had happened with Catherine. I certainly was not through grieving. And I think what was amazing to me is that I was angry at God for not answering me, but he wasn't angry that I was angry, you know? And I think we don't have that in human relationship. In human relationship, if I get angry at you, you're going to be disgruntled with me back. You know, that's kind of how it goes. Or you're going to be disappointed in me, or you're going to be upset with me. And, you know, with God, it wasn't like that. It was like he said, I know you're angry, and that's okay. And then you can't be angry anymore when God comes and he comforts you like that. And he, you know, he says that he understands. And I really felt that. I felt and experienced such grace and such a freedom to be able to really cry out to him and ask all my questions. And he didn't leave. He didn't turn his back. He wasn't upset with me that I was angry. He wasn't surprised by my doubt. And that made me want to come to him all the more, because that is so safe and so loving. And so I found that he did not take away the pain. You know, it's still a tragic thing. I still see Catherine's children today, 5 or 6 years later. You know, we love them, and we send them to school, and we see them on weekends. And I still look at them, and I wish their mom was here. I wish they got to grow up with her. But at the same time, God drew so near during our time of pain. He was so present and so obvious. You know, he really was who he says he is, Emmanuel, God with us. He was with us. And I think I got to see his heart in a whole new way, that he does hear me. And even when he doesn't answer as I would have expected, he does answer, and he answers with himself.
Yes. Yeah. What a beautiful thing. And for you to see the face of God in the midst of darkness, beautiful.
Yeah, it is.
Just totally indescribable. And everyone, you're going to want to pick up a copy, your own copy of Daring to Hope, Finding God's Goodness in the Broken and the Beautiful. Katie's eloquently written it. The words just jump off the page. And I got to tell you, though. Okay, so I was walking at this point in your book, and I was past, like, I don't know, chapter 10 maybe or 11. And I was just like, there's got to be a love story in here. And I kept walking. I'm like, all right, Lord, you know, there's something hidden. And then he told me in his voice, he was like, well, do you not see? I presented all the love stories already. But then.
I love that.
Yeah. But then it hit me. Chapter 15, I think it was. And all of a sudden I was like, here he comes. And it's Benji. You got to bring Benji in on this. I mean, come on.
Yeah, definitely one of my greatest surprises, and certainly one of my greatest blessings, is that I met Benji 7 years ago, I guess, when he had come here on a short-term trip. And similarly, the Lord led him to come back and start doing men's ministry full-time here, just discipling other young men in the area to be better fathers and better husbands and better Christ followers. And he has been here doing that now for many years. And for a while, I mean, we were just friends. We went to the same church and we went to the same Bible study, and we kind of hung out with the same crowd of people. And slowly over time, God just began to stir in my heart and began to kind of give me different eyes for him. And I was very hesitant to it for a very, very long time. But I'm so thankful that God kind of finally broke down my walls and Yeah, and we've been married now for almost 3 years, and it's just it's the greatest joy to have just a partner in ministry, somebody who desires to see the gospel go forth as well, and somebody who just loves our children so well and leads our family so well. I think back to trying to do it alone and just think, No. How did you survive? Because now I can't even imagine trying to do any of it without him.
Yeah, yeah. And in there, in the writing, one of your daughters, and I don't know if I remember who it was, she's like, I have a daddy.
Yes. Yeah. One of the sweetest moments. That was the morning of our wedding. I heard her shout it from the next room. She said, I'm getting a dad today. And that's what we woke up to. And what just a beautiful picture of, you know, what God desires for us to feel about him, you know, and I just, yeah, it's been such a special blessing to get to see them be loved by an earthly father who's such a reflection of their heavenly father. I know that they will know and understand God so much more because of that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. A blessing for you, a blessing for your daughters, and we'll eventually get to number 14 here in a few minutes, but I don't want to jump too far ahead. I want to ask you, amongst all this darkness, there's storms in all of our lives. Some, you know, whoever's listening right now, they're going through a storm. Whether it be a divorce, whether it be a loss of a child, a loss of a parent, just job and finances. Where do you find hope in all the darkness?
I mean, like I shared a little bit with Catherine's story, I think my hope comes from knowing that God is who he says he is, and he's always taking care of us, and he's always providing for us, and it really truly is not always in the way that we want or even in the way that we expect, but I have seen over and over and over and over again that even when I'm not getting the outcome I want, God draws near to me, and that was, he wants to give me more of him, and he wants me to become more like him, and that's where I find my hope, in knowing that I truly believe he has purpose in all of it, both for me and my good, but also just for his glory in all the earth. And of course, we have the most unshakable hope in Jesus and the fact that Jesus is coming back. And as much as it doesn't feel like it sometimes, our sufferings are light and momentary. You know, they really are passing away. And it's all of no consequence if at the end of the day we can say that we knew Jesus, we knew him truly, and we knew his love for us.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, in this noisy world, Katie, I think we are very much distracted. And I mentioned this earlier, when you get to more to your end of your book, you talk about that you can really hear his voice even in the noise. And I think we drowned out God sometimes, that we don't find that quietness. We don't find that bathroom, that prayer room that works for us in our lifestyle that we lead. What would you tell the person who's listening right now as to how do you draw near to God? We talk about that. We hear that from the pulpit. What does that mean in true action?
I think it can look a little bit different for everybody, you know, and I'm just as guilty as the next person of jumping out of bed in the morning, like hit the ground with your feet running and get 3 hours into the day and think, man, I really wanted to start my day with like quiet time and the Bible and prayer. But, you know, a kid was crying and somebody needed a banana, or, you know, it happens to all of us. And so I do think a huge part of it is carving out just intentional still time. But another habit that I really love that has worked for me is just to pick out one or two scriptures for a season, whether that be a week or a month or however long I think I need them, and write them on a note card or stick them on a sticky note and post them somewhere I can see them, and then just cultivate the habit of repeating those things back to God. So I'll pick out an aspect of his character, or even one that comes to mind recently was Psalm 63. It says, because your love is better than life, my lips will glorify you. And just to kind of make that my refrain throughout the day, you know, whether it's chopping vegetables for supper or folding laundry or helping somebody with homework or mopping up a mess and fighting against feeling exasperated, I'll instead repeat to myself, Lord, your love is better than life. My lips will glorify you. And I think he gives us the scriptures for a purpose, and he wants that to be a way that we do draw near to him. And so for me, that's been a really great discipline when I find that it's hard to be still, or when I find that I've skipped that quiet time in the morning, even if it's unintentionally, you know, to just have scripture in my mind and on my lips really helps me move from a posture of thinking that prayer has to be in this certain way at a certain time to having prayer just be more of a lifestyle and a conversation that's happening throughout my day.
I love that. A conversation. Just like we're having here, that's what God wants from us, is a conversation.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, beautiful. Okay, so we got to fast forward. I got to share your book again, Daring to Hope, Finding God's Goodness in the Broken and the Beautiful. We will have the links for you in the show notes. You're going to want to pick up your copy. You're going to want to grab your tissue. I use tons of them already. Even walking, I was like, good thing I had a sleeve on, I'm just saying. Because I was happy and joyful, and then I was crying, and there were tears of joy, and I was just like, oh my gosh, you hit on everything. And you know, personally, Katie, what I saw in your book when you wrote this, and I read it, obviously I wasn't there when you wrote it, but when I was reading it, I got this sense that you would share a story biblically, and then you took a story and a portion of it and took it and related it and said, this is mine. As if you were writing the Bible and saying, this is what Jesus did through me at this time. This is my Bible right now, and how I see God's work in me and how he's moving in me. And it just, your transparency, gorgeous, just indescribable, beautiful.
Oh, well, thank you. I really appreciate that. You know, my hope and my prayer with this book was definitely that it would be very relatable. You know, my life is so different than kind of the average. I live in a different place, and I have definitely a bigger than average family. And so I know there is room to look and go, oh, that's so amazing, or oh, I could never do that. But my real goal was that it would be relatable to people, no matter what our suffering is, no matter what our struggle is, that people would read it and feel like, yeah, the God that I worship and the God you worship, he's the same guy, and he is for you, and he loves you, and he wants to meet you in this way, no matter what your trial is. And I loved writing this book. And I loved just, I felt like God just gave me the scriptures to kind of weave into it. And it was just such a joyful time of writing for me. And I felt like I got to relearn a lot of the lessons he's been teaching me over the past years and revisit those things. But I did weave in the Bible because I think it's important for us to recognize that that God is the same God that we're serving. And that God, the way that he worked in those stories, is the way that he's working in our own lives. And the way that he comforted those people in the Old Testament is the way that he comforts us, and the way that he brought healing and peace and beauty in those stories is the way that he brings healing and peace and beauty today. His desire for us is the same. And so it was a joyful book to write, for sure. And I'm really prayerful that it will be an encouragement to lots of people, even people that are living a very, very different life than me, to just know God wherever they are right now.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and Post-its exist in Uganda. <'Cause> you have a whole wall of them. You guys got to pick up the book. I'm just saying, pick up your copy, because you'll understand that little portion of it about the Post-its. Seriously, write them down. She uses a lot of them, and it's awesome. I think it's great. Okay, so we're not going to tell them that part of the story. So I want to talk about faithfulness a little bit. You wrote in your book, you did a quote from Aristotle: we are what we repeatedly do. Excellent, therefore, is not an act, but a habit. And you went on to talk about What is faithfulness? Can you talk a little bit to that?
Yeah, I think I wrote that down and hung it on my fridge around the time we'd been caring for a terminally ill woman, and she just needed a lot of repeated care. You know, every couple hours she needed porridge and she needed to be changed because she couldn't, you know, she couldn't walk or really move anymore, and she needed certain amounts of medicine. And I was homeschooling a bunch of my kids at the time, and so, you know, every day the same spelling words and the same math problems. And I had really transitioned from a season of very public ministry with a lot of acclaim, maybe, and a lot of praise, to a really private ministry that was just within my own home. You know, Mazima was being run by a phenomenal staff, and I had kind of come down off of the season of writing and public speaking, and I felt like a lot of my ministry was just right there in my home, whether it was a math lesson or whether it was cooking porridge for Betty. And after she died, I noticed that I kept walking back into her room, and I realized that I just kept walking back in there out of habit. There wasn't anybody in there to check on anymore, but it had become such a part of my day for many, many months to walk into her room to check on her that I did it long after she was gone. And so I stumbled upon that quote, and it just was the right timing. You know, it hit home for me that it's the little things that we do over and over and over and over again that make us who we are and make a difference in the kingdom. It's the lives that we pour into after many, many hard conversations, and it's cleaning up the same messes of the same children over and over again, and it's continuing to serve dinner to our family, even on nights when getting dinner on the table seems impossible. All those little things add up to a lifetime of obedience. You know, I think Francis Chan is who said, "How we spend our days will be how we spend our lives." Mm-hmm. That was such a powerful statement to me as a mother, especially, you know, like how I spend my day in front of my child, in front of these people who come into our home, like that will be how I spend my life. And so if I want to glorify God with my life, I have to glorify God today in the small things. And God just really began to teach me what faithfulness is, not just the faithfulness that he pours out, which is so apparent, mm-hmm. but also faithfulness as a fruit of the Spirit that he says that I can have, which is a faithfulness to just do small things well again and again and again unto him.
Powerful, powerful message there. We all need to really more than grab on to that, because we are in a world of Instagram stories and Facebook feeds, and it's great to be able to communicate with people around the world. I love it. We wouldn't be able to do this if it wasn't for our technology.
Absolutely.
You know, but at the same time, like you're saying, there's something more, and we tend to miss it. We're expecting something big from the sky all the time for us to realize, oh, that means we're being faithful. Sure. This is good. But that's not always what we get.
Right, exactly. Sometimes, probably more often than not, our faithfulness is just loving the people that God has given us to love in the place that God has called us to serve, and doing that day after day after day. And that amounts to a life that glorifies him.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Amen for that. Well, you not only got married, so you were a single mother. I don't think people understand this. You were a single mother to 13 girls for how long?
At least 6 years.
Oh, that's a lot of estrogen in one room. I'm just saying.
It is so many girls. It is so many girls all the time.
But I think that, I mean, that's just, I have 5 children, but my hat's off to you. That I just, yes, I love you even more. But then Benji shows up, which was somewhat of a surprise, because God said, I'm going to give you a piece of me. I mean, that when I was reading the story, mm-hmm. that's how I read it, was
yes,
it was truly
absolutely.
A love story. He said, mm-hmm. here, this is me. Now you are to take of this, even though you had decided that marriage probably wasn't going to be a part of your life
right.
at all. And then something else happened. And you had this little blessed one who is now terrorizing your house. Talk a little bit about sweet Noah.
Yeah, so it would have been a year ago in May. We had sweet Noah, our first little boy, and he is just the most loved, most doted upon little boy by his sisters. I really truly believe that the Lord has brought even a lot of healing into places of their heart that maybe we didn't even recognize needed healing. And it's just been really, really beautiful to see just the sense of comfort that he's brought into our home with Noah, and to watch them just love him and care for him. And also, I think the sense of security that has been brought to them. I think there was, of course, a lot of fear surrounding the first biological child. You know, will the girls feel that they are different? Will they feel that he might somehow be favored? But I think it's really honestly cemented for them. The fact that they have this brother that came into the family in a different way than them, but is loved completely the same. I think for them, that's really even cemented them as like, oh yeah, we're all part of this family equally. And so it's just been a really, really beautiful season from the Lord. Noah is just like the happiest little guy. I mean, he sleeps through the night now, so it's easier for me to say that than it would have been 6 months ago. But
yes, little blessings, literally sleeping through the night. Amen.
Oh, girl. It is amazing, though. It is amazing how much you can do on so little sleep.
God is good.
Yes.
He very much is. Well, I can't help but think of Noah and the rainbows. And you were one who, you love looking at rainbows, and you tell a story. We're not going to tell that story because they're going to want to pick up their own copy of their book, Daring to Hope, Finding God's Goodness in the Broken and the Beautiful. But in that, you talk about the rainbows. And so I want to ask you, how do you find beauty in the storm?
Yeah. I mean, I think we're all always still learning to find it, but I think most especially I find beauty in the midst of life storms by looking to God and just remembering who He is. And who He is does not change. It is always constant. It is always true. And I am always loved, which is beautiful, no matter what hardship I'm going through.
Oh. You are so loved. So what actually inspired you? We've talked a little bit about what's in the book. You give golden nuggets throughout the entire book. What really drew you to write Daring to Hope?
Well, honestly, after I wrote my first book, I said like, oh, I am not doing this again. Just, you know, it's kind of a fine line between promoting a book you wrote about your life and just kind of self-promotion, which feels a little icky. And so I really thought like, oh, this is not going to happen again. And for a while after the first book became very popular, I kind of holed away and felt like, okay, well, that's enough of like everybody knowing all the things about my life. And I don't really, I'm just going to be hiding over here. I don't really like this. Didn't know that many people were going to read it. And so, yeah, and then, you know, like I said, and like I share in the book, we did go through a difficult season as a family of many trials, and also a really beautiful season where God was growing my faith a lot and giving me a lot of unexpected blessings as well. And I spent, you know, it's been 7 years since I wrote the first book, and I mean, probably eight after you think of all the publication stuff. The book was done long before it came out. And so it was years and years of me just processing through a lot of stuff with just the Lord, you know, and just journaling that for myself only. And I think that was a really beautiful season of just writing and learning, not so I could teach somebody else, not so that I could share it, but just for me. And then about 6 months before Noah was born, so a little less than 2 years ago, I really just felt God start to nudge me like, okay, I taught you all the things, and you've processed through all these things, and now it's time to share. And, you know, of course, there's that back and forth of like, oh, are you sure? Is this self-motivated? Is this really hearing the voice of God? What's going on here?
Too much noise. Really, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Really began to pray through that and explore what it would look like. And one weekend in February, sat down and started typing and felt like things just kind of started to fall into place. And so I said, okay, Lord, if this is what's supposed to happen, then you'll give me the words, right? You're going to have to give me the words. And it was really exciting. You know, the first book, Kisses from Katie, I didn't write all by myself. I had a lot of blogs that we pulled from, and then I had a co-writer who helped me edit things and kind of compile things and put them together along the way. But I was, you know, I was pulling from writings from mostly when I was 18 and 19 and those first couple years that I lived here in Uganda. And so this book, I felt like I got to write out of more of a place of experience and, I mean, definitely more of a place of knowledge of the Lord. Hopefully we're all growing in that year by year by year. But I also kind of got to write it at my own pace and by myself. And it was just really, it was a really intimate process with the Lord. I felt like he was really using it to shape my heart and to teach me things, even as I was desiring to share with others. So anyway, I really enjoyed writing it more than I thought I would.
Well, that's awesome, because that's what you seem to hear it from every author. When's your next book? And they're like, I just got through this one. I'm done.
Oh, no. Well, by the time you're at the end of it, you're like, oh, man, never again. Maybe it takes you 8 years to recover. I don't know.
Well, thank goodness you've recovered, because people would be missing out if you hadn't written Daring to Hope. And they're going to want to pick up their own copy of it. Of course, we will have the links in the show notes. Katie, I know people are going to want to get in touch with you, and they're going to want to know more about your ministry. So tell them where they can find you.
Yeah, the best way to get information about me or our ministry is at www.amazima.org. And that's AMAZIMA.org. And there you'll find links to my personal blog, our ministry blog. There will be a link to the book page where you can even pre-order the book, and also all different ways to donate or get involved with our work here.
Oh, fabulous. And also, I want to mention, because you have women who actually make things and sell things as part of their job. Is this one way they can also find some of those products?
Yeah, absolutely. There is a link on Amazima's website to the store as well, where there is handmade jewelry for sale that a group of mothers here are making in order to support their family.
Oh, how beautiful. And then if somebody wants to help monetarily, will they find a link there too if they want to simply donate to your ministries to help you?
Yes, absolutely. On the website, there will be a link to donate, and there are different ways you can donate. You can monthly sponsor a child. You can contribute to a building at the secondary school that we're still in the process of. So there are lots of options there, and we always have a few open staff positions. So if anyone is feeling a little nudge from God, I know we have several open positions on the website right now as well.
Oh, well, fabulous. Maybe there is someone that is saying, hey, and God's telling them. If you're finding that nudge, you're definitely going to want to click on the link in the show notes. Make sure we will get you connected with Katie. Before we come to a close, Katie, is there anything, I mean, we've covered a lot. 14 children, a husband, yay, love stories, a love story, or what you call, I believe in there, a love affair with God. What have we left out that you want to leave with our listeners today?
I feel like we've covered a lot. I just, I hope and pray that everybody who reads this book really does know and come away from the book knowing God more deeply, and also feeling more confident of the fact that he is who he says he is. He does love us so, so much. That would be my prayer for each listener and each reader, that they would just know how loved they are.
Beautiful. Well, this series is called My Strength is My Story. What has your story gifted you?
Oh, wow. I mean, I think just a faith and a relationship with Jesus that I probably never could have imagined, you know, at the beginning. I think that God has just shown himself to me in so, so many beautiful ways and grown me in ways that I never would have known without this kind of unusual story, and I'm thankful to be walking the path that I am.
Oh, Well, Katie, it has truly been a pleasure having you here, to have read your book, to know you, call you friend and sister in Christ. I would love to invite you back, you know, anytime you want to. And also, if you have information or updates regarding your ministry, I would love to be able to help you and serve you in that way, too.
Wow, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
You're so welcome. Thank you for your time. Many blessings.
Thank you.
Feeling inspired, ready to train for life, and love your journey? Visit createyournow.com for more incredible resources to help you along the way. We'll see you next time on Create Your Now, Your Best Selfie. And remember, always be sure you consult your physician before beginning any health and fitness plan.